Back long, long ago, before there were MA programs, no MABS, no MACM, no MA, fill in the blank, we have so many now. It used to be that every student at Dallas Seminary preached in chapel. Now, would that make you want to come or not come? I don't know. But of course, now we no longer have the opportunity to have everybody up here and doing a chapel message for us, but we have been pleased to enjoy messages from our students this week, and it really is a great celebration for our faculty and for our school, and I hope an encouragement for you as classmates to see your colleagues up here preaching. I see some heads nodding. That's really good. Our speaker this morning is Jeremiah Wolpert. You've heard that name already, and Jeremiah is looking at this as a great highlight, kind of a capstone to his THM program, but I want you to know he's actually looking forward to something much more than speaking today. He's going to get married next month. So congratulations, Jeremiah. We're excited for you, and he's showing great character and perseverance and steadiness and faithfulness as he can't see his bride right now. She's actually in Boston and a long ways away, and they'll be married in Arizona. Jeremiah has mentioned to me that he really enjoys thinking about his days at DTS, and one of his great memories is a day when he was picking up Dr. P, actually, from, was it a speaking engagement, and bringing him back to the seminary, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. There wasn't much conversation going on between driver and passenger, and when they arrived at Dallas Seminary, he said Dr. P's head kind of jerked up as he saw the sign. And he said with great contentment, something about the tone of his voice, Dallas Theological Seminary. And I think Jeremiah is basically saying he will remember this sense of contentment, of an enjoyment of God's blessing on time here at Dallas Theological Seminary. What a great memory. He loves to be able to preach and see the Holy Spirit at work in his life as well as the lives of people that get to hear the word. So I trust that you will join me in welcoming Jeremiah to our platform this morning.
What a privilege it is to preach God's word, but what an honor it is to be asked to preach it here this morning before all of you. And I want to take a moment and reaffirm what the gratitude that was expressed throughout this week by my fellow preachers. Thank you to the faculty. Thank you for your investment in me and my fellow students, but also thank you for the testimony of your commitment to Jesus Christ. So thank you. To my fellow students, I want to thank each of you for your encouragement and edification over these past few years. And to my fellow graduates, it's Friday and we made it. We're almost there. And graduation is coming. Amen. Jessica Buchanan, a humanitarian aid worker, was traveling in Somalia when her vehicle was forced to pull to the side of the road. Immediately, men began to surround the vehicles, bang on the windows ferociously, and pull Jessica out of the car. These Somalian pirates were going to hold her hostage for 3 months, nearly 93 days. And they were demanding from the United States millions of dollars in exchange for Jessica, one of their citizens. In a captivity video, Jessica was able to make a plea to the United States, requesting their intervention, but she had little hope that anyone would come to her rescue. Over time, her health began to deteriorate. She caught an infectious disease, and she began to become more and more overwhelmed with the idea that she would die before anyone would come to her rescue. But the President of the United States knew her name, and he was planning a mission to rescue her. Hopelessness in the life of the believer and the life of the seminary student is believing that God is incapable of intervening on our behalf. With it come fear and anxiety, which are mere symptoms of distrust. As many of us approach graduation, we may become anxious, wondering what God is going to provide for us in the future in moments of transition. Or perhaps this morning you're just trying to finish the semester. You're not only balancing schoolwork, you got pressures that come from family, pressures that come from ministry, and there are times when you feel like just throwing in the towel. Or perhaps this morning you are all too familiar with that statistic from Dr. Malfer's course. 9 out of 10 churches have either declined or are in a plateau. And perhaps you look at your ministry and feel as if it's hopeless. What do you do when you experience hopelessness in your life? What do you do when you and your wife walk in for a routine checkup? She's 6 months pregnant and they can't find the heartbeat. What do you do in moments of tragedy when fear and anxiety overwhelm you? This morning, we're going to find an anecdote to hopelessness in Psalm 125. Psalm 125 is a psalm of confidence that God is able to intervene on Israel's behalf. And in Psalm 125, I want to look at three responses to hopelessness. One, we can trust God to preserve his people, trust God to protect his people, and lastly, trust God to purify his people. Psalm 125 reads this way: "Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forever. For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest upon the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous reach out their hands to iniquity. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good and to those who are upright in their hearts. But as for those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord shall lead them away with the workers of iniquity. Peace be upon Israel." Respond to hopelessness by trusting God to preserve his people. Respond to hopelessness by trusting God to preserve his people. We may not know when this psalm is written, so we don't know who's threatening Israel. But we do know how the psalmist responds to those threats. The psalmist responds by declaring his confidence in the one true God. And like I said, it doesn't matter who's threatening Israel. It could be the great armies of the Assyrians. It could be the great armies of the Medo-Persians. It doesn't matter. Regardless, the psalmist declares that those who trust in the Lord, and that's key, those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved but abides forever. Mount Zion throughout the Old Testament is known as an invincible mountain, a mountain that is set apart for the purposes of the Lord. You see it in passages like 1 Kings 11:36. And just as Israel experiences invincibility because she is set apart for God's purposes, Israel, who places her trust in the Lord, experiences that same invincibility. But not only does Israel experience invincibility when she places her trust in the Lord, she also experiences security. The psalmist goes on to declare, "As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forever." You ever think about that? That's an exciting expression of the security the psalmist feels. That regardless of the incoming threats of surrounding nations, he feels secure in God's presence. I can just imagine him looking out of Jerusalem, writing this psalm, and sensing God's presence in his life. Even though he can see the threat, he's trusting God to preserve Israel from this time forth and forever. This reminds me of a little boy I was watching a YouTube video of. Little boy went to the zoo and he was looking at the lions, and the parents are excitedly videotaping this guy. And I feel bad for him because he can barely walk. He's maybe 3 or 4 years old, and they dress him up in this hoodie. It's a striped hoodie. And he's looking at the lions. The funny thing is, the lions are just as excited to see him. And one lion in particular thinks he sees lunch. And he looks at this little guy and he begins to open his mouth, trying to get towards this child, but he can't get to him because there's this piece of glass. And he begins to get frustrated, pawing at the glass. I want to ask the question, why aren't the parents doing anything? Why don't the parents pick up their child and run in fear? While the parents can see the threat, they're trusting in the glass to protect, to preserve and secure their child. The psalmist here can see the threat of surrounding nations, but he's trusting in God to preserve and secure his people from this time forth and forever. Brothers and sisters, this morning, even though we can see clouds of hopelessness begin to descend upon us, hopelessness that results from uncertainty of the future, hopelessness that results from tragedy, hopelessness that results from just becoming discouraged over a tough semester, we know that God is greater than our hopelessness. And we can trust him to preserve us not only through this season of our lives, but from this time forth and forever. Trust God to preserve his people. Secondly, we see that we're called to respond to hopelessness by trusting God to protect his people. Trust God to protect his people. Verse 3 reads, "For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest upon the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous reach out their hands to iniquity." When you see the word scepter, you probably think of a king. And so this scepter of wickedness refers to these outside oppressive rulers who are seeking to threaten Israel. Yet the psalmist responds by declaring that he's going to trust in the Lord to protect Israel. And we see that God protects Israel for two reasons. Number one, he protects Israel because they belong to him. In verse 3, it says, "The scepter of wickedness shall not rest upon the land allotted to the righteous." The righteous here refer to God's covenant people. God has promised to bless them if they obey and to curse them if they disobey. But as a father protects his children, so God protects his children, Israel. Secondly, we see that God protects Israel from outside oppressive rulers, not only because they belong to him, but in order to protect them from moral corruption. The end of the verse says, "Lest the righteous reach out their hands to iniquity." And you see that the psalmist is trusting in God to protect Israel from that. In our own lives, the way we are called to first recognize the threat of moral corruption and respond to it by making God king. Individually, we allow God to be king over our lives by allowing him to sit upon the throne of our hearts. And corporately, we allow God to sit upon the throne of his church where he should be. One of the ways we guard against moral corruption is thinking about some of the ways the culture influences our thinking. And one way in particular, a subtle way, is this idea of individualism. You know, if we want something done right, we got to do it ourselves. And this leads us to trust in ourselves more than we trust in God. A father took his son by the hand. He took him outside and he wanted to teach him a lesson. So he took his son and he placed him on top of the car and he looked at him and he said, "Son, I want you to trust me. I want you to have faith in me and I want you to jump towards me." And his son, adorable little kid, maybe 5 years old, he's got chubby cheeks, he's got big dimples. He says, "Daddy, I love you and all, but I'm a little scared." His father looks at him and says, "Have faith, my son." And as his son builds up enough courage, he leaps towards his father as his father moves out of the way just in time for the son to fall on the ground. And the father looks at his son and says, "Son, you see, you can never trust anybody but yourself." And we see that the problem with that individualistic thinking is that when we trust in ourselves, the problem is we tend to fail. And it's better to trust in God. It's better to trust in God to protect us from moral corruption because we belong to him, because we are his people. So we're called to first respond to hopelessness by trusting God to preserve his people, trusting God to protect his people. But lastly, we're called to respond to hopelessness by trusting God to purify his people. Trust God to purify his people. Verse 4 reads, "Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and to those who are upright in their hearts. But as for those who turn aside their crooked ways, the Lord shall lead them away with the workers of iniquity. Peace be upon Israel." Israel is called to respond to these outside threats by trusting God to purify his people. We see that sin alienates God from his people, and it can cause their prayers for protection and preservation to be hindered. In the first three verses, the psalmist is declaring his confidence in the Lord. He's declaring who God is in relationship to his people. And because God is holy, his people must be holy. And so the psalmist demonstrates his trust in God to purify his people by means of a prayer. And he says, "Do good, O Lord, to those who are good." And then he asks God to purify Israel. He asks God to lead those on a crooked path away with the workers of iniquity. And in doing so, he's asking God to allow Israel to experience the blessings of protection and preservation as God purifies his people. What I always think about why we get hopeless at times, and I think one of the major reasons is we're not depending upon God to meet our needs. There are times when we're not depending upon God, and we may trust in ourselves, may trust in someone else, but when we're not depending upon God to meet our needs, many times that's symptomatic of a poor prayer life. I want to ask you, how's your prayer life this morning? My sister, she always felt called to be a pharmacist, always felt called to be into, go to pharmacy school. So 3 or 4 years ago, she finally had the opportunity. She applied to pharmacy school the first time, didn't get in. Applied the second time, the second year, took the PCAT once more, didn't get in again. A lot of people, you know, at this point would say, well, maybe God's telling you something. Maybe he's leading you in another direction. No. She felt called. She knew that she wanted to be a pharmacist. God was calling her in that direction. She applied again the third time, didn't get in again. But she was placed on the waiting list. And last year, 2 weeks before school started for her, she finally got into school. But after she began to move and assess her financial situation, she began the first week of pharmacy school, and she just felt overwhelmed. She's thinking to herself, how in the world can I survive pharmacy school if I can't even survive the first week? Then she realized she wasn't depending upon God. And she turned to God to express her trust in him. She said, God, the same God I placed my hope in to get me into pharmacy school is the same God who's going to see me through it. All of us are called into a particular ministry, whatever that looks like, a ministry here at seminary. But we're called to trust God to purify us of any other dependency upon which we are relying on other than him. And we're called to allow God to purify our hearts. You know, in transitional times in our lives when we're wondering, God, what's next for me? In times when we're moving to the next chapter in our life and in times of uncertainty, we think, God, where are you taking me? But the interesting thing is God's not so much concerned about where we're going as much as he's concerned about who we are in the process. He's more concerned about an upright heart. He's more concerned about us taking time to examine our hearts and allowing God to purify us of anything and any and everything that we are relying on other than him. Take time in prayer and an active prayer life to demonstrate your trust in God to purify you, to purify your hearts as he begins to purify his church as well and establish his kingdom. He said we're called to respond to hopelessness by trusting God to preserve, protect, and purify. Jessica Buchanan, after 93 days of what she would describe as hell, was rescued by Navy SEAL Team 6. And when they did that mission that night, it was completely dark. And Navy SEAL Team 6, after they secured the area, they approached Jessica. They had her identify herself. And they looked her in the eyes and said, Jessica, you're safe. Jessica, we're here to take you home. And then they were waiting for the helicopter. They asked Jessica to lie on the ground. And they began to make a circle around her, and they began to place their bodies on top of her. In that moment, Jessica felt like the most important thing to them in that middle of that Syrian desert. Despite the threat of more men trying to hurt her, she felt secure. That's the security the people in the psalm feel. Security, despite the threats coming in from Israel. And I'm telling you this morning, it doesn't matter what type of hopelessness you're experiencing. It doesn't matter what type of tragedy you've experienced in your life. It doesn't matter how insecure you feel about where God's taking you in the future. We can trust in God. And when we trust him, we experience that security. We can run to him and he can take us and hold us. You know, we said this psalm is a psalm of confidence, but really the psalm is a psalm of worship. Worship is a declaration of who God is, what he's doing, what he promises to do. And we see that we are called to respond in worship by declaring who God is and placing our trust in him to protect, preserve, and purify his people. You know, one of the best examples of that I've seen has actually happened here in this chapel. Almost a year ago, I was taking a summer course. Just take one summer course, if you guys take summer courses, you know there's a chapel once a week. It's really shortened. I'll be honest, can't remember who was speaking that day. Don't remember the message, but what I do remember is that Chaplain Bill had just come back from the seminary. He'd been away for a couple weeks. And many of you know what had happened. These were uncertain times of what was going on with his wife, probably going through a lot of suffering. And he stood before us and he didn't say much. He said two things that I will not forget. He said, God, may your name be glorified and may your will be done. Regardless of what was happening in his life, he said, God, may your name be glorified and may your will be done. And then he led us in worship. What a beautiful illustration of what it looks like to respond to uncertainties in our life by trusting in God to protect, preserve, and purify us, and demonstrating that through worship. So, brothers, I want to exhort you this morning, and sisters this morning, that you would trust in God to protect, preserve, and purify you as you demonstrate that trust by means of your worship. And the interesting thing is that God doesn't always promise to take away our suffering. He doesn't always take away our pain, but he promises to see us through it. He grants us his presence, and he grants us security, knowing that we trust him. So whether you're facing hopelessness today, or whether you experience it sometime in the future, may you declare to him, Lord, great is your faithfulness. O God, my Father, there is no shadow of turning with thee. You do not change. Can't remember the end. Thy compassions, they fail not. But as thou hast been, thou forever wilt be. Will you sing the chorus with me? Great is thy faithfulness. Great is thy faithfulness. More.